Sister Simone Campbell is executive director of the network Catholic Lobby. As the original nun on the bus, Simone has pioneered the kind of on-the-ground activism that we've seen bring attention to key public policy issues in recent months. With debate around federal budget issues growing louder all the time, I wanted to get her perspective on how key moral components of the budget are likely to fare. And so I'm delighted to welcome Sister Simone back to State of Belief Radio. It's always great to talk with you, and I appreciate you being with us again today.
Oh, it's always an honor, Weldon. Thanks for the opportunity.
You focused attention on the moral aspects of the federal budget in recent years, even before the level of cut-at-all-cost rhetoric reached the pitch that it has now. So how bad is it looking right now?
Well, I have to say that I could get accused of being Chicken Little saying the sky is falling, the sky is falling. But I'm afraid this time the sky fell. And what we have to be really keenly aware of that we learned in the healthcare fight is that we the people can raise it up again. Because what's happening in the president's proposals are a decimation of the key domestic programs that make our country viable, that support we the people, and a shifting of all of that savings either into tax cuts for the wealthy or into the military and the internal military in our nation in the immigration fight of creating an internal, they're enhancing the internal force in our nation to round up folks, hardworking folks who are integral to our communities. And so what we the people know, though, is that we the people can make the difference. Mm-hmm. We can change this.
What is most at risk from your perspective?
The shocking thing is my list is quite long, but what we're focusing on at Network are really four key things. The first is with regards to this shift of money to the immigration force, the ICE patrols, immigration and customs enforcement folks, to hire an additional, I believe it's 50,000 more, and to then make our cities and our countrysides places of basically military, internal military operation. This has got to be stopped. The second piece is the housing issue in our nation, which is actually, I think, one of the reasons I'm most upset about this is that I thought our president would get the idea of building, that if we don't have housing for our people, our nation suffers. But the proposal right now is to cut the Section 8 housing, which is not nearly enough for the needs of our nation. It's additionally to eliminate the community development block grants. Now, community development block grants are a great Republican program because what they do is they give money to the local level for the local level to choose how to use. And this is all their idea that the local level can decide. Well, they're going to zero it out, which means a lot of job training programs, a lot of transportation programs, a lot of the housing first, they're going to eliminate. And then additionally with housing, they want to eliminate the support for paying for utilities. And the fact is that low-wage workers cannot afford utilities, and they want to zero it out. So housing is a key issue. Healthcare, we've got to make sure it's fully funded. We won one battle, but we have to make sure it's fully funded. And then finally, the census. Now, the census is a sleeper topic. And what people don't realize is that it's mandated by the Constitution that every 10 years we count the people in our nation. But so much of federal funding gets determined by the count. And so if we don't count all our people, then our states suffer, our localities suffer. So we've got to make sure that there's an effective count. Now, that was a lot, but I have a lot of passion about this thing. But we, the people, can do this. It's not rocket science. We can do this.
What kind of mind, what kind of vision of our country drives the kind of budget that we're looking at?
Oh, that is a good question. I've really thought about this quite a bit, and I think two things are driving it. The first is money, that the definition of winning is giving more money to people at the top. And this idea that tax cuts, contracts, all this should go to the wealthy is a continuation of the failed trickle-down economics that we've had for the last almost 40 years. Mm-hmm. And the focus on a failed policy, they've got this idea they just need to double down. But you know, the other piece that's behind this is an effort to solidify the Republican Party. And the Republican Party is actually, I think, at least two, if not three parties right now. Mm-hmm. And their effort to hold themselves together is creating this very divisive policies. Mm-hmm. Because there's the group that doesn't want government spending, so this cutting the budget is about giving the Freedom Caucus a cut to government. Mm-hmm. There's a group of businesses that want better tax benefits so that they can get more revenue. And then there's a group of Republicans and those are the big business folks, and then there's a group of Republicans that are about small business. Mm-hmm. And so this budget really reflects the divided Republican Party, and it doesn't reflect the people. That's the problem.
You know, and I think that's a very important discussion, even if it stands alone. I'm also connecting that to a very pragmatic question, which I want to ask now, and that is, what arguments are the most likely to be effective in the current political climate? There was a time when we've stood together and talked about the budget from a moral perspective. I'm not sure moral arguments count for much in this budget.
In a nation where truth seems to be lacking in the conversation, you may have a point, but it doesn't mean we're not going to make it.
Right.
And this is the thing that I've found around the country, is that people are hungry for an alternative vision, mm-hmm. for an alternative that says you're not alone, I have your back. And that's the key piece that we're lifting up in D.C., is that a faithful budget is a budget that cares for the constitutional mandate to be we the people. Mm-hmm. We the people of the United States, not I the corporation or I the rich one, I the politician, we the people. Now, the thing that we learned with healthcare is that people make a difference. Mm-hmm. And the number of calls that our little organization got in, over 4,000 calls to the House of Representatives in 3 days. But it's because the people cared, mm-hmm. and that made a difference. It's harder to care about the budget because it comes up every year, and it's sort of like, oh, my gosh, too complicated, it's only dollars. No, it's our people. Mm-hmm. So what we're going to do is to lift up the moral story, lift up the moral voice in our interface setting, and then we're going to get our people to call. Mm-hmm. So call early, call often, put your member of Congress on speed dial. Please call. You can do this. We can use our voices to either present the moral story or intimidate our politicians. I'm not above that.
Yeah. So if I ask where are you focusing your efforts, you would say on members of Congress and people who are activists. Would that be right?
Right. Members of Congress on the committees, but also then we need all of our members of Congress, but not everybody's called to the lobbying side of it, as I am, I know. But we all have a piece to play. So we can talk to our neighbors about this. We can say how worried we are. We can write letters to the editor. We can engage in discourse in our churches, synagogues, mosques. We can create a community that we hunger for. Mm-hmm. And then create legislation out of that community. And that's where we need to do the building, but everybody has a part. My part happens to be this, but everyone has a piece to play in making our nation better. So I think if we all stand up and do our part, we can stop this horror.
Well, you've alluded already to the fact that there's been some encouraging reporting coming out regarding the growing influence of progressive voices of faith in the current political environment. Whom are you working in coalition with to make sure this happens?
Well, the coalition is growing rapidly, but in D.C., we're working with the interfaith community, the Washington Interfaith Staff community, on the faithful budget. We're also working in coalition with our secular colleagues at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities and a wide group called the Coalition for Human Needs. I mean, they have over 250 organizations involved in it, and we are glad for the opportunity to collaborate broadly, and we know that our faith voice is essential in that conversation.
Simona, are there other issues beyond the budget that the current political climate has compelled you and your colleagues to engage in?
Yes, well, these days it's sort of like drinking from a fire hose. It's quite a challenge. Well, healthcare has been our big first fight. And I'm so glad at the result. We've got to keep our eyes on it, and we have to keep our eyes on regulation because much of the Affordable Care Act is implemented through regulation, and we have to make sure that, one, regulations stay in place, and two, that they are followed and enforced. So that's going to be one key issue. Additionally, what we have to see is that at the heart of all of our issues is this issue of income and wealth disparity. And that too many of our hardworking families are being left behind because of flat wages. Mm-hmm. And so we're working at both trying to lift up the issue of living wages and a family-friendly workplace. And Ivanka Trump actually has spoken about the importance of a family-friendly workplace. So we're hoping we can find some coalition there to get some movement going. We're looking for every opportunity we can to reduce the income and wealth disparity in our nation. And using the lens of race and ethnicity in our nation is to look and see how communities of color are really more adversely impacted by our discriminatory policies. So we're working with a broad coalition to make this happen. But I'll tell you, when you've got so many fires to fight, it's hard to move forward our proactive agenda, but it's still there.
Tell our listeners what they need to be doing right now to get more informed and to stay engaged around these issues.
Well, I'd urge all your listeners to come to our website, networklobby.org. That's networklobby.org. And we have digested weekly what's going on in Congress and how we can make change. Additionally, there's a little button there that you can say take action. And once you've registered on your computer will recognize you, or our computer, I guess it is, recognizes you going forward. And we send alerts weekly about the most important action to take. Usually it's an email. Sometimes it's a phone call. I will say in these urgent actions ahead, phone calls are going to be the most important. Mm-hmm. Emails help, but phone calls are really important. And the third best, the absolute best, is visit your member of Congress. Get to know him or her and engage them in conversation. They are part of we the people, and we the people need to make our needs known. And so by joining us, we can give you hints, we can give you resources, we can give you summaries, easy-to-read summaries of what's going on. But there's a lot of other fine organizations. Pick one. You can't do them all. Just pick one, maybe two, follow them, engage, and do your part. We need you.
What keeps you going? Where are you drawing hope from?
Oh, I'm drawing hope from all of the people that I meet. I was just at Boston College and told a story about Margaret, who I tell often about someone who died because she didn't have health care. And she said, Margaret's been my fuel for Medicaid expansion and health care reform. And a man came up to me and told me that his brother had a similar story. He died in 2002 because he was an independent contractor and didn't have health care and died of colon cancer. When I know that we share these stories, we share a common truth, then that is at the source of my energy. But it's taking it, for me, it's taking it to meditation and prayer to have something new break open. And what I try is to hold all these people who are in my broken heart, but broken hearts release joy into the universe. And so I'm trying to hold them and stay faithful to the call. For me, it's the call of the gospel. It could be the call of the Constitution to do the best we can for each other. So with others in community, how can I not keep going?
Sister Simone Campbell is executive director of the Network Catholic Lobby, an activist, attorney, faith leader, and poet. Sister Simone is also the author of the important book, A Nun on the Bus, How All of Us Can Create Hope, Change, and Community. Simone, these are trying times. I so appreciate knowing that you're doing what you're doing, and it's great having you with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Always an honor, Weldon. Thank you so much. Keep doing your part, too, and we can do it together.